Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin, broadcasting live from New York. Just ahead on News One Now, lots of drama. Democrat debate, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, they get real personal in Brooklyn. I called it the brawl in Brooklyn. We'll break down last night's debate. Also, Senator Sanders tries to woo the black voters at the National Action Network Conference. We have highlights from his speech. It has been 2 years since Boko Haram abducted these girls from Chibok, Nigeria, nearly 300 young ladies. Will discuss a newly released video showing proof of life. Also, Regina Hall, Ice Cube, and Cynthia Entertainer talked about bringing the laughs in Barbershop, the next cut out in theaters today. And of course, we have a sneak peek of our upcoming News One Now primetime special, Kerry Washington Revealed, and BuzzFeed's video. That's right. The video on questions for black people from black folks has riled people up. I'm trying to understand, what is the big deal? It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One.
Do we really feel confident about a candidate saying that she's going to bring change in America when she is so dependent on big money interests? I don't think so.
This is a phony attack that is designed to raise questions when there is no evidence or support to undergird the insinuations that he is putting forward in these attacks.
Thank you, Secretary.
Well, things got a wee bit personal last night between Secretary Hillary Clinton and Senator Bernie Sanders as they battled at the Brooklyn Navy Yards just days ahead of the New York primary. The stakes are high in the state of New York. Right now, a new WNBC Wall Street Journal Marist poll shows Secretary Clinton with a 17-point lead. Senator Sanders, though, must grab a good chunk of the 247 delegates up for grab in the Tuesday primary to have a shot at beating Secretary Clinton for the Democratic nomination. Right now, Clinton has 1,289 pledged delegates and 469 superdelegates. Sanders has a little over 1,000 pledged delegates and 31 superdelegates. 2,383 delegates are needed to win the Democratic nomination. The two went at it all night during the debate, and of course, the crime bill came up as well. Here is more of the brawl in Brooklyn.
Look, I supported the crime bill. My husband has apologized. He was the president who actually signed it.
Senator Sanders voted for it.
I'm sorry for the consequences that were unintended and that have had a very unfortunate impact on people's lives. I've seen the results of what has happened in families and in communities.
Why did you call him out?
Because it was a racist term and everybody knew it was a racist term.
I want white people to recognize that there is systemic racism. It's also in employment, it's in housing, but it is in the criminal justice system as well.
You got 51% of African-American kids today who graduated high school who are unemployed or underemployed. You know what I think? Maybe we invest in jobs and education for those kids, not jails and incarceration.
We have got to help more kids get off to a good start. That's why I want a good teacher in a good school for every child, regardless of the zip code that child lives in.
Too many lives have been destroyed because people possess marijuana, millions over a 30-year period. And that is why I believe we should take marijuana out of the Federal Controlled Substance Act.
I'm getting a little bit concerned here because, you know, I really believe that the president has done an incredible job against great odds and deserves to be supported.
I do question her judgment. I question a judgment which voted for the war in Iraq, the worst foreign policy blunder in the history of this country.
Well, the people of New York voted for me twice to be their senator from New York. President Obama trusted my judgment enough to ask me to be Secretary of State for the United States.
All right, folks, here to weigh in on the debate, our panel in D.C., Midwin Charles, a legal analyst and contributor for Essence Magazine, attorney A. Scott Bolton, a partner with Reed Smith, and also Lauren Victoria Burke, managing editor for Politics365.com. So, folks, it was interesting to see both of them get very personal. Senator Sanders, if you look at the previous debates where he tried to keep it very nice and congenial, but this time, wow, they were going back and forth. I couldn't tell whether or not, and in fact, I was, we had a TV One event last night, and Aretha Franklin had a birthday party, so I listened to a lot of this in the car going back and forth, and I couldn't tell if this was Mets versus the Yankees or if it was the Giants versus Jets.
Roland, they certainly took their gloves off last night, and I got to tell you, you know, it was, I think they both had good nights. I think Bernie Sanders really hit some home runs in regard to her weakest points, and that is her credibility, not releasing the speeches. Listen, if you didn't say anything that's going to change the course of this election, release the speeches. It was a tete-a-tete about his IRS taxes. He's releasing those, although he kept saying his wife does his taxes. I don't know where that was going, but both had good nights. For Bernie Sanders, though, he's got to hit a home run and get people to start voting for him as opposed to getting the loudest applause and most Democrats believing in what he says, but he hasn't been able to get those same voters to vote for him versus Hillary Clinton in several of these states, despite his momentum. So he's got a lot of work to do. New York's going to be a bellwether for him and her.
I also think that if you looked at this debate, no one is going to come away. I don't think that they've changed any minds. If you were a Bernie supporter before this, you were still a Bernie supporter. And if you were a Hillary supporter before this, you were still a Hillary supporter. These are the same exact issues that they've been talking about for the entire election. I was glad that they had this debate, in the Republic of Brooklyn, my hometown. And it's true.
The Republic of Brooklyn.
You heard it here.
Really?
Correct.
Stop.
And I'm glad they took the gloves off, because at this point it is down to the wire, and I think that Bernie has to make some great strides in trying to kind of bring along some more voters, and it's true he is bringing out a lot of people to his rallies, but those people are not showing up to the polls. Hillary is still ahead of him by over 2 million votes all over the country, so he does have to sort of bridge that divide.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton is really, really lucky that her opponent is Bernie Sanders, because if her opponent was someone who wasn't a Democratic Socialist
or
somebody that was maybe a Mark Warner, some sort of candidate like that, she would be losing, I think. I mean, he is able to catch up to her, even though she's supposed to be the front runner. He's not far behind. He does very well at debates. I thought she did well last night, but you know, there were some moments there for him that were really huge, particularly his answer to the super predators line, because everybody knew it was racist, was huge. She finally came up with a longer explanation for the Clinton crime bill, but the fact of the matter is these apologies and backtracking started when she started to run for president. We didn't hear any of this when she was in the Senate. No. So it doesn't ring as true as it might if we'd heard some of her concern on these issues, particularly stop and frisk in New York when she was in the United States Senate.
Well, one of the things that also I think she still has to come up with, and that is you got to give a better answer to the speeches you gave to Goldman Sachs. I mean, bottom line is it can't just be, I'll sort of release it. Obviously, there's a reason. There's a reason why she has not released those speeches.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. And see, here's the thing with Hillary Clinton. You know, Bernie has passion. And she sounds like a professional politician.
Right.
And her biggest problem is credibility. Can you believe her? I mean, when asked in a prior interview, have you ever lied to the American people? She gave this very wrong answer, if you will. I tried not to. I don't think so. And last night about the speeches to the financial organizations, just release them then. Bernie Sanders said, I'll release mine, except I don't have any. And so I thought that was a highlight for him last night. But she's got a credibility issue, and I think you're right. right. Mm-hmm. If Bernie Sanders was another candidate, her credibility issue and the gap there would be even bigger and stronger. And so she's really got to convince voters that she's going to be credible, because right now I don't believe anybody believes the word she says.
And things like the minimum wage position that we heard for the first time last night, the $15 minimum wage, that's new. And that's why she doesn't have a lot of credibility, because she's effectively trying to Xerox him and match him instead of having her own strong positions. And you may not agree with Sanders on everything, but you certainly believe what he's saying.
Yeah, Midwin.
Yeah, I think that he makes a very good point in the sense where she does have a huge credibility issue. But I understand why she perhaps may want to hold back on this. And a lot of people aren't talking about this. This is a woman who earned fees when she was not running for president. She was a private citizen at the time. She decided to be paid for her speeches. Former Secretary of States have done it. Colin Powell has done it. It's not a major issue.
But I understand.
That's not the issue.
I understand she was going to be running for president. However, she does have a credibility issue. If you look at the polls when people are coming out from state to state, they trust Sanders more than her. And so as a result, she should release the transcripts and just let the issue die. The problem is she's prolonging this issue and dragging it out, and it doesn't need to be. She should just release the transcripts and move on.
First, you talk about trying to gain trust. That's what Senator Bernie Sanders is trying to do among black voters yesterday in New York. He spoke to the National Action Network conference one day after Secretary Clinton. The Vermont senator acknowledged he has been friends with Clinton for 25 years, but he says they have their differences. He also used his age of 74 years old to his advantage by pointing out he was present for a big moment in American history.
It is whether we bring people together to tell the people on top that they cannot have it all. That we're not going to live in a nation where the top 0.1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. I don't think that's what America should be about. You elect me president, you're going to have a president who is prepared to take on the billionaire class, not take their money. Embarrassed to have to admit this, but I am old enough to have been at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. I was there with Dr. King. Dates me, but I was there. But I want everybody to remember what I know you all know. The name of that march, it's not just the March on Washington, it was the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, all right, Reverend Sharpton?
I wasn't there, but you
asked. He's a kid. He's a good kid. He's growing. He's learning.
Well, sounds like Sanders been listening to me talk on this show about the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. Folks, bottom line is, I still contend had the Bernie Sanders campaign had a real outreach effort to African Americans in August, 6 months before South Carolina, he would be doing better among black voters.
Yeah. Roland, I think you're absolutely right about that. He has so much credibility. I mean, he's not new to this liberal and socialist or progressive politics. He's been there. He's earnest. He's got a ton of credibility. His biggest challenge with black voters, white voters, and all voters on the Democratic Party is simply, can he win? Is he beatable? Or is Hillary Clinton beatable? And it's hard, because that's a amorphous issue for every voter that goes to the polls and stuff. But I thought his presentation with the National Action Network was outstanding. And I think people believe in him. He has a place in the Democratic Party and leadership in this country. At the same time, I'm just not sure he's got enough time to do it.
Lauren?
To win.
Yeah, I think he has a name recognition problem in the black community that, of course, the Clintons do not have. So he was, of course, at a huge disadvantage. And I'm not sure that outreach would have changed that so much, because his opponent is Hillary Clinton, somebody that has been known for years. So I think that was a difficulty that I'm not sure he could have actually fixed. I mean, he has a lot of black staffers. He went to HBCUs. He did all the things that I think any Democratic candidate should do. But I think there was that name recognition gap, and he couldn't overcome it.
Midwin, 30 seconds.
And also, as I've always said on this show and others, African Americans like to be courted. If you want our vote, you are going to have to work for it. You are going to have to come to the events, go to the churches, shake the hands, eat the chicken dinners at the churches, and all kinds of things. And over the years,
right.
Bernie has not been seen doing that. He has not been seen over the years coming out when issues have afflicted the African American community. For example, you know, this sort of incarceration rate.
Got it.
African Americans being killed by police in the streets. No one has heard of him talking about these things over the years. Yeah.
All right, Finn, hold tight for 1 second, folks. Coming up, a glimmer of hope for Nigeria. A new proof of life video surfaces 2 years since these girls were abducted from their homes. We'll discuss this, what this video means for the families. Also, a BuzzFeed video releases a video of black folks addressing various stereotypes, and it set black Twitter on fire. I'm trying to figure out why folks are tripping, and I'll tell you why later in the show. Also, what's up with Bethany Frankel telling young black entrepreneurs that they should get a white man to be the face of their companies? Yeah, we'll break that down. Plus, the cast of Barbershop also we'll talk to in the show. Barbershop, The Next Cut. And, of course, our Sunday show, Primetime, Kerry Washington, reveal right here on TV One, 15 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back on News One Now.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Yesterday marked the second anniversary of the abduction of 276 girls from a Chibok Nigerian school by the radical Islamic group Boko Haram. Since the abduction, there are still 219 of those girls missing, their fate unknown. Well, recently, a video was released showing 15 of the girls to give their parents proof of life and to motivate the government to help release the remaining girls as well. You're joining us via Skype to talk about this video and the latest claims of Boko Haram. It's Amnesty International's Advocacy Director, Adote Akwe. Adote, welcome to News One Now.
Thank you for having me.
What does it mean for Nigeria, also for the rest of the world, that this video has surfaced showing 15 of the 216 girls who are still missing?
Well, even though we can't verify, you know, the authenticity or, you know, whether the girls are in good health or that kind of thing, I think it's a really a sharp reminder to the Nigerian government that it needs to redouble its efforts to find the girls and to see them reintegrated back into society. It's also a reminder to the international community that they need to help the Nigerian government find the girls, but also do it in a way that's legal and in keeping with international standards. And of course, the need for support for the families of the girls and the ones that are not shown in the video. That's this, really what we take away from this.
This is obviously a horrible, horrible situation there. We have seen other stories where young girls have been used as human weapons, if you will. And you're talking about an extremely radical group. And the Nigerian government, they've already announced to their security apparatus that they want an immediate assessment as to what is going on as a result of this video.
That's correct. You know, one of the things that has been a tragedy for the last 2 years has been transparency and accountability. The Nigerian government, under Goodluck Jonathan, the previous president, did a terrible job of even meeting with the families, let alone letting them know what they were trying to do. President Buhari, who has been in power a year now, has been a little bit better in saying that this is a priority, but the information about what they're doing, what they're trying to do, and the support for the families has been fairly lacking. So this is really, the video is kind of a real jolt, I think, and it should push people to say, you know, we're not going to let these girls just be forgotten, or the other 2,000, you know, people who have been abducted, just be forgotten and not, you know, not helped by programs.
What more can the United States do to assist the Nigerian government when it comes to finding these young girls and returning them home?
Well, the Obama administration is already providing, some intelligence. I think they've been, for the last 2 years, they've been providing some satellite reconnaissance. And some of the other friends of the government have also been providing capacity for the military. I think it's important that, you know, the girls and their continued incarceration not just be seen only as their release, but also as a call to action for reintegration. They have a huge internally displaced population. There are more people who also need help. So the government has to turn its attention to sort of rebuilding the northern part of the country and reintegrating those people and helping them resettle.
Well, we surely appreciate it, Abu Ghattawi. Thanks so very much. And hopefully, again, we will see these young girls return home safe and sound. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Folks, coming up, reality star Bethany Frankel tells young black entrepreneurs that they should get a white man to be the face of their companies. And you know what? They might even want to sleep with the boss. Huh, we'll talk to a woman who challenged Frankel on her comments at that conference. Also, BuzzFeed Video releases a controversial video called 27 Questions for Black People by Black People. Yet black folks got an attitude about the video. Really? Really? Also, the cast of Barbershop, the next cut right here on News One Now. Plus, we'll have a sneak peek about my primetime interview with Kerry Washington, which will air Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on TV One. Trust me, you don't want to miss it. 22 minutes after the hour. I'll be back on News One Now in just a moment.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
On a News One Now primetime special.
None of what he said has any relevance.
Kerry Washington plays Anita Hill in the HBO film Confirmation.
He is not, I'm not trying the to say that. Victim.
And she's talking to Roland Martin about her controversial new role.
The country was kind of forced to deal with race and gender and power in a way that we had never done before.
Politics.
We make ourselves vulnerable when we think that politics are not about us.
And what's next? Don't miss a News One Now primetime special, Kerry Washington Revealed, Sunday night at 10 on TV One.
Represent, huh?
What the hell is every Thursday right here on News One Now, TV One? But this story, I think, certainly speaks to it. Reality TV star and Skinny Girl Vodka founder Bethany Frankel was speaking at a conference, an entrepreneurs conference in New York City. It was called Rent the Runways and UBS's Project Entrepreneur. The event took place earlier this week. It is an initiative to equip female founders with the tools and advice they need to thrive in the marketplace. So Frankel decides to tell a room full of female CEOs that if you're black, you should hire a white man to serve as the face of your company. Frankel also implied that women should have sex with men in exchange for capital. Joining us via Skype from New York City is Mary Pryor. She was in attendance for the event, and she also was one of the few women in the audience who actually challenged Frankel on her comments. So, Mary, you wrote a piece for the Huffington Post. So you're sitting in the audience, and she begins to say these things. What are the other women in the room saying and doing?
Well, Roland, I wrote the piece for Audacrosity, and it got picked up by Huffington Post and numerous other sites this week. Obviously, other women in the room were very confused, along with other men in the room, and they were really just kind of taken aback. Myself and another woman who I didn't even know, who's Japanese, named Naomi, that I met later, just came together, spotted each other, both stood up quickly, and decided to tag team on the conversation and try to take her to task, because it was really just alarming to be in a room full of hundreds of women in one of the most diverse rooms I've been in. And kudos to Project Entrepreneur for that. But for that to be the takeaway that you give hundreds of mostly women in the room was the craziest thing I've ever received as part of advice. So I personally, just given that there were fellow female women of color that were there that I knew, didn't know, I just felt that that couldn't be the item that someone takes away with in terms of how they apply it to business. So you
stood up and you said something. And what did the organizers of the conference do?
When we stood up and we came together and started talking, we weren't really able to have a dialogue because it became just a match of over talking with each other. She wasn't really open to hearing what we were trying to say regarding that remark. We did get in a couple of points. One point was made with me by not being ashamed to admit that you are Black. Another point named by my other colleague, Naomi, was that why would you want to say something like that to keep the glass ceiling intact? Why would you go with something pretty much that's very stereotypical?
Well, here was a statement released by the organizers of the conference. I want to go ahead and pull that up, folks. And they said, a special note to our weekend intensive guests. We understand that guests were offended during our day one luncheon following remarks made by our speaker. Of course, they didn't name the speaker in the press release. This was not our intention and is contrary to our goals. We apologize to our guests. We launched Project Entrepreneur to champion all women. We thank those of you who candidly spoke out and welcome this important dialogue. We look forward to continuing to empower women entrepreneurs as they build their businesses. Mayor, are you satisfied with that apology?
I think that's fine. I don't think that anyone's going to get an apology from Bethany. I think that it's unfortunate that Project Entrepreneur wasn't able. I mean, you can't control anyone's conversation when it comes to items like that, but you should know who you're bringing into the room to speak to people. And then even with those remarks occurring on a Saturday, waiting until the 12th until it became an issue was a little bit of a jar to me. Just really not something that it shouldn't have to become a blown up situation to realize that it's a situation, because a lot of people sent notes, complaints, talked about it. And obviously everybody has a life. I didn't know that I would have to be doing the news like this whole week. I'm glad that I'm doing this, but like, you can't, it's not cool, it's not fair, you can't get funding, you can't get money, you can't get funder support as a woman, as a Black woman, as a Latina woman, as an Asian woman, and to go around with those stereotypes and to keep that going, especially in a room such as that, it's unacceptable. And I would never, I don't regret what I did.
I want to bring in Midwin Charles, Scott Bolden, as well as Lawn Victoria Burke. Midwin, to hear these comments, you're going, really? So, hey, Black women, go hire a white guy to front your company and then sleep with men to rise in business?
Right.
Really?
Right. Well, now we know how Bethany got to the top, right?
Or bottom.
Right. Let the record reflect. However, like, you know, the whole idea of, you know, sleeping with a man to get to the top, whatever, that's old. It's whatever. But her idea that you should put the white man as the front of the business, I get it. What she's alluding to there is that, you know, white men earn 100% on that dollar. Two, they are perceived to be smarter and more competent than everybody else. I get where she is coming from by saying it, but it's still dumb.
But Roland, hold on. I don't get it at all. And I hate to put my legal hat on here, but those two pieces of advice were illegal pieces of advice. People get prosecuted for sleeping with men in exchange for capital. People get prosecuted for SBA fraud for having a white front on a minority-owned business. And it makes simply no sense. And quite frankly, opens itself up, the organization and her, to exposure. What if someone follows that advice and doesn't turn out the way she suggests?
Right, which is why I said it was dumb.
Right. Lauren?
It was dumb, but there was some accuracy there. I happen to own a business with a Caucasian person, one of our white brothers and sisters, who's really, really a great guy. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a difference, frankly. I mean, we have to understand that we do live in a country with 300 years of past history that matters,
that's
okay?
Right.
So I get that point, just like Midwin was saying. There is a point to be made there. You know, the other part of it with regard to sex is completely ridiculous, but that underlying point is real.
Mm-hmm.
So it
is
something that should be discussed.
And Roland, Roland, just quickly, I will tell you, I was in federal court here in D.C. yesterday, and the deference that is given to the white male attorneys, I have to tell you, is ridiculous. Even when they are dumber and not prepared, they are automatically presumed to be smarter than everybody else.
All right, then, folks, we'll leave it right there. Mary, we certainly appreciate you speaking up, speaking out, and maybe next time folks will think better than to invite Bethany Frank people to give advice, why don't you actually invite a real CEO, a sister like a Sheila Johnson or even a Carol H. Williams, folks who've actually been in business for a number of years to also advise other entrepreneurs. So, Mary, thank you so very much. Coming up, folks, are black folks quick to laugh at others, but when it's turned on black folks, we get a little sensitive. BuzzFeed videos, their latest video, tested that theory, and the reaction, let's just say, wasn't pretty. Also, Barbershop, The Next Cut comes out in theaters today. We'll talk with cast members Regina Hall, Ice Cube, and Seth the Entertainer. And we'll also hear from Kerry Washington, a sneak peek of our upcoming primetime special, Kerry Washington Reveal, airing on TV1 on Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern. I'll be right back on News One Now.
On a News One Now primetime special, Kerry Washington talks to Roland Martin about her new role as Anita Hill in HBO's film Confirmation. Don't miss a News One Now primetime special, Kerry Washington Revealed, Sunday night at 10 on TV One.
Black people look at your shoes before they greet you.
Why are we more likely to engage in the new dance trend than we are to get involved in politics or opening a business?
How did watermelon become our thing? Like, everybody should love watermelon.
Why do you get upset when I don't like a black celebrity?
Race aside, some people are just terrible.
Why do we call each other the N-word, but get vehemently upset when a white person uses the N-word?
All right, folks, so BuzzFeed Video dropped that particular video, questions blacks have for 27 questions black people have for black people. And Lord, black folks lost their mind on Twitter, and they were all upset and angry and upset. And I'm sitting there going, really? Really? If you actually know that BuzzFeed Video does a lot of these video making fun of white people, Asian people, Hispanic people, gay people, Oscar so white. Here's a little bit more of the video.
Why do some black people say that you're pretty for a dark-skinned girl?
When that is said to me, it still makes me feel like the ugliest little black thing.
Why do some black men only date white women?
Why is it okay for black men to date white women, but not okay for a black woman to date outside her race?
Why do you protest Black Lives Matter?
And then tear each other down in the next breath.
Why do we say that we don't?
All right, folks, that was some of the video. You can actually go to BuzzFeed Video's timeline on Twitter and actually see the full video. Joining us right now is Jozen Cummings. He started the hashtag Real Black People Question that has caught fire all over Black Twitter. And, of course, we have our panel there as well. And, Jozen, I'm trying to understand this here, okay? This is just me, all right? We've actually aired some of BuzzFeed Video's hilarious videos on here. When they went after Trump, they went after Oscar So White. They had, you know, questions black people have for white people, questions Asian people have for white people. And they take these things that people talk about that are sort of out there and they highlight it and it's really satirical. Yet here, black folks just lost their mind as if they were having a real serious discussion. I'm trying to understand what was the big problem.
Well, I think there was a tone problem if it was satirical, because when you look at the faces of the people that are asking the question, they kind of look like people that are, you know, they have the same face and kind of the same tone as people that are giving you a PSA on drugs.
But they're actors. But here's the deal. These are actors. And again, we've actually played the video. I mean, we played a hilarious video, questions black people have for white people. And you know what? Black folks loved it. We loved it. Mm-hmm. I just think this is a case where black folks didn't like the fact that a lot of stuff that was said in this video, trust me, I've heard people have called in my radio show, people, and it got a little touchy, and black folks, I think, on this one, a little sensitive.
I don't think that there is there is truth to that. When I was attending Howard University and even, you know, few years after that, I would hear these questions. I don't hear them a lot as much, but I definitely did. I just felt like there are questions that black people ask black people that aren't even as deep. And that's why I felt like the unfortunate thing is that there was a wasted opportunity to teach people, other people, how we actually talk to each other. And so I wasn't necessarily saying you guys shouldn't have asked those questions. I just felt like those were the wrong questions that black people ask.
Well, I want to pull up Lauren Victoria Burke, Midwin Charles, and A. Scott Bolden. And Lauren, I want to start with you. Again, you know, what was interesting to me is, and I'm telling you, when I retweeted the video that questions black people have for white people, oh my God, black folks just loved it. And same thing Asians have for whites. This is one of those things where, again, we laugh at when we get to sort of ask questions of others and like, oh man, that was great, that was funny. But then all of a sudden it's kind of like, okay, why y'all had to bring that up? Why y'all had to bring up the brothers dating the white women? When we talk about that stuff.
Yeah, we do talk about it, of course, but I think that our history is different than others. I mean, obviously, we didn't come in through Ellis Island. We're a little bit more sensitive, I think, for good reason. And anytime you try to encapsulate the lives of 43 million people into one of these sort of cute little funny attempts, it doesn't come off correctly. And quite frankly, some of it is just sort of dumb, okay? There's a common sense problem here.
I guess within the context
of BuzzFeed, and BuzzFeed does this, but it's kind of like...
these videos are meant to be dumb.
Yeah,
okay. It's like, wait a minute. This is not... The video's not a documentary.
I know, but...
It's meant to be a funny, satirical... Because, in fact, even the stereotypes are dumb.
But funny and satirical does not work well with a group of people in America who has experienced what we've experienced.
Well, guess what?
It is different. It is different than other groups.
Well, guess what? I guarantee you, every single question in there, I've heard black comedians do it, and black audiences fall out.
And Roland,
go ahead, Midwin and Scott.
No, I was just going to say that was going to be my point. I think the major issue here is the source of the video, right? BuzzFeed is not known to be a black media publication. While they do hire, it's my understanding that they do hire a lot of people of color. You know, kudos to that.
They aren't known
for being a sort of curator of black culture. You understand what I'm saying? So if this had come from someone else, I think if this had come from someone else, you know, I don't know, BET. If this had come from BET, perhaps I think
no,
that
it's
the
not.
Response would
we,
be different.
Then, we would have said BET ain't black owned. Scott, I got 20 seconds. I got to go back with Josie's final comment.
Black people talk about black people in black settings and black homes, right? The problem with this video is we start talking about black issues and there are a lot of white, yellow, and red people around, and we got a problem with that.
Yeah. Got it. Jose, real quick, and the person who's over these BuzzFeed videos is a black woman. Jose, go ahead with final comment. I got 20 seconds.
All right. Couple of real black people questions. Do you have some lotion? That's something we ask each other. How's your family doing? That's something we ask each other. Is there a dress code for the party? That's something we ask each other.
So I got this here. So here's my deal, Josie. Here's my deal to all the black people whining. Make your own damn video. I got to go, Josie. Thanks a lot.
Coming up,
I'll talk with the cast of Barbershop, Ice Cube, Regina Hall, Hit the Entertainer, about the sequel, Barbershop, The Next Cut. Also, Kerry Washington Reveal. All of that, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
All right, folks, Barbershop, The Next Cut hits theaters today. And we sat down to talk to Regina Hall, Ice Cube, and Seth the Entertainer about the new film.
Oh, man, you know, we got so many professionals, you know, so that was no problem. You know, we didn't have no problem with getting it done. We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of people in that shop, and it was just fun to be there, to hang in between the shots, and you know what I mean, and then put a great movie, put great things on the screen.
Yeah, we, of course, Cube and I, we've done all three of them, and then you had somebody like Malcolm Lee who's directed many ensemble casts of folks of color. And so he knows that, you know, we're going to clown a little bit and we have a good time. But then, you know, Cube is helming the ship. And so we're able to.
He was cracking a whip.
Yeah, I mean, it's Cube, man. You know what I mean?
You got to crack no whip.
Cube got a light side, man. That's why he do a lot of comedies. People, you know, they think he all tough all the time, but he like comedies, man. So, but, you know, you get the job done. You know, it's not going to be a whole lot of just nonsense going on. That will stop.
So, Regina, what was it like being in the midst of these two Barbershop veterans?
You know, it's great. I mean, I love Sed. I love Cube. I've worked with them before, so I was really just, you know, you're always a little nervous to enter into somebody else's franchise when they've done it so well already. So you're like, well, what am I going to do, you know? So they were great, though. They helped me figure out who Angie was, and it was kind of great to work off of Cube and off of my little Eddie, off of Sed. So it was good.
So who chose to go with the blue hair?
I chose it. Did you like it?
You were colorful.
I felt like, you know, she's a stylist, and girls, like, hair is a character in a woman's life.
Right.
So I was like, what is Angie's statement? So, yeah, I went with blue.
Now, there's no one, first of all, in previous movies, let's just say y'all caused a little stir with swinging on some folks. Everybody seemed to get hit in this movie. I'm watching, I'm like, okay, did they really... Okay, the president, okay, Bill Cosby. I'm sitting here like, check. Okay, let's go ahead and do a black checklist. See who else gets hit in the movie.
Hey, you know, it's all about having fun, you know. These are some major people in our lives, and, you know.
Plus, it's the barbershop.
It's the barbershop. Right. You got to talk about it. You know, we wouldn't be doing the right movie if we weren't talking about the topics of the day. And, you know, nobody's exempt in the barbershop, man. They're probably talking about us right now in the barbershop right now, right, four of us.
Right, but I wouldn't advise y'all to go public with it because, you know, we will come back. See, I tell people all the time, folks send you tweets and stuff, you know, they say, look, you shouldn't respond. No, I believe in responding. I believe in firing right back.
No problem, man. We should have had you in the barbershop.
That's right. There should have been an ascot in the barbershop because we would get in that ascot. I got to ask you about Deion Cole. I, after watching the movie, literally, I'm sitting in the middle of it. I send him a text. Dude, you trying to steal every scene?
Don't no woman want no moist Duncan Hines-ass dude like Gerard.
Deion is a beast.
Yeah.
He's a beast, you know, straight from Chicago and funny as hell.
Young Hog, man. I mean, you know, he's in the hot zone, like, just in general, like stand-up TV shows. And so to have Deion in the movie, you know, he came in day one, jumped in, started doing his thing with his own style of that Deion style of humor where it's a little slow. You never quite see it coming. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, boom.
Deion, he just called you slow.
No, the delivery. the delivery. That's because he walk everywhere.
Yeah, man, stay off that weed, Deion.
So who was the most serious during the whole shooting? Who was
on the set?
Yeah. So was there anyone who was more serious than anybody else?
It had to be Malcolm Lee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Malcolm was a little
Well, he was directed, so
well, that's what he liked to call it. But we.
That was some shade. No, that was shade.
Wow. You gonna let you go. We had to finish that movie for you now.
Malcolm gets it done. Mm-hmm. That's what I love about him. You know, he gets it done. Have fun, but get the work done.
Who was the craziest on set?
JB.
JB Smooth is full.
Yeah, he had he had fun with his character where he wore like a bunch of little kind of English styles.
Yeah,
I think he was enjoying it.
Sherlock Holmes.
And his tangents, he'd go on those little tangents.
Yeah, we go on these
he
long
that
runs.
Too much. Like the suits a little too much.
Cause y'all filmed this when?
We filmed this,
April? May.
May and June. May into June. Yeah.
And the reason I'm asking because he had those damn suits at the NBA All-Star game. So,
he stuck from the set.
Yes, he had those suits at the All-Star game.
Maybe he was doing promo. He was promoting and we didn't know it. It was like a subconscious.
No, I think he liked it.
I think.
Well, they don't look bad on him because he's tall and lean, so he can carry all those patterns.
Yeah, that don't work for me, said in Q.
Yeah.
That won't work for us.
Yeah, it looked
like. Can't wear those.
Like you can't write that?
I look like I have on my grandmama couch. Y'all, fabrics and colors would be too. You look like a quilt.
You're like, who done sat on set? That's not the couch, that's set.
It'd be like one of them things that mix in and then you jump up. Ah!
Then we got to put some plastic on you.
Yeah, oh, man, don't do that.
And one of the things also that you have, just like with previous edition of the film, there's a strong, serious, relevant message.
Yeah.
This wasn't just about laughs. Yeah. I mean, it was real.
Yeah. You know, that's what it's all about, you know. It's cool to have fun in games. It's cool to talk about, you know, different celebrities and all that. But at the end of the day, a barbershop is dealing with real situations, real people, real issues that walk through the door every day. So, you know, we wanted to make sure we had a reason to do a third one. And the reason is, you know, Calvin now has a son who's 14, who rocks the dreads, don't care about the barbershop. And, you know, he's trying to keep his son out the streets. And I think a lot of parents are dealing with that situation, you know, throughout many communities, not just the Black community, but every community. You know, they're trying to keep their kids on the right path. So I just felt like that was a great hook for this movie, and it's so relevant.
Well, Gene, I think a lot of folks will be very surprised watching this film to see dealing with the violence in Chicago head on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, you know, Cube, he's made an interesting point that how do you do a movie in Chicago, set it there and not really address what's going on? I mean, what is going on there is it's terrible. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people who've been born and raised on the south side of Chicago, and they're afraid to go outside because the gun violence is so bad.
See, it also, look, being from St. Louis, Midwest City, seeing some of the same things. Yeah. And what was very interesting, first of all, Chicago used to be the second largest city in the country when it comes to African Americans. Now they've gone to number three behind Atlanta. Lots of folks have left. A lot of folks, I mean, I hear from people who say, look, man, I want to leave this, forget leaving the neighborhood, I want to leave the city. Again, that's also something that was, you know, a part of this movie, this sort of this friction of staying, leaving where right. you are.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that you know, though we have so many great messages in this movie, that was one that I felt really resounded in the sense that, you know, that the main character was ready to go. When we think about the violence in our neighborhoods, often the images are if there's an uprising that people, you know, everybody go, why y'all burn up y'all own neighborhood? Why y'all tear up y'all neighborhood? And I think it's important to show that the people who work there, who have businesses there, they are a part of the community too. So, you know, when you out there killing somebody on the same block that somebody's got a business or a company, you got to care about everybody in that neighborhood. It can't be about you claiming your street and not worrying about the people who also live around there, and they have to, you know, you want to create value for the whole thing. And so I thought that that's what we tried to show in the movie, that Calvin, the people who work in Calvin's, they real people. They live right here in your neighborhood, care about them.
You know? How do you think folks who are from there or from neighborhoods like that will receive this?
I think they'll love this movie, you know, because ultimately it's an uplifting movie. It's not really a movie that's, you know, harping so much on the bad, but it's really searching for the good. And, you know, and we had fun making it, and I think they're just going to appreciate that we are conscious of what they're going through and that it's movie worthy.
Regina, as you were shooting it, when you look at the message of this movie, did it touch you in a unique way? Did it cause you to sort of think more or rethink what more many of us should be doing when it comes to our communities?
Well, you know, I was born and raised here in Washington, D.C., and, you know, we've obviously had times in Washington, even currently, where we've had issues of violence and you know, our young boys and, you know, drugs and different things like that. So what I did love about this movie is that oftentimes we are waiting or rallying for someone else to do something. So the fact that they decided to take it in their own hands, and although things still happen, it does make a difference. And I loved the scene with Cedric and Cube or Calvin and Eddie in the bar, because mm-hmm. I loved when he said, you know what? One life got lost, but how many did we save? And I love the idea that we can all make a difference if we do something. And so if each of us do something, I can't even imagine the domino that would effect that would have on everyone.
And last question, you touched on this, Cube. The reality is that even in moments of despair, you still have hope that it can get better.
Without a doubt, you know, when things are falling apart, sometimes they're falling in place. And so you always got to look for the silver lining and what's going to make you keep going, you know, especially at times when it's tragedy. You got to look for the thing that keeps you going, because, you know, when somebody dies, you know, you have to still keep living. And, you know, if not, two people die. And you know, so that's a bigger effect on the community. So, yeah, you have to look for ways to be strong in those hard times. You know, hopefully family, friends can get you through it.
Sid, you're my golf buddy. You get final comment.
Definitely want to encourage everybody to go see Barbershop The Next Cut, man. It's a great movie, great themes, great story. But most of all, we kept the funny going in the mm-hmm. shop, man. And we have that movie that feels like these are people you know, and these are the stories that you've been talking about, and we kind of bring it to life on film, man.
Up next, Kerry Washington Reveal, right here on News 1 Now TV 1.
On a News One Now primetime special, Kerry Washington talks to Roland Martin about her new role as Anita Hill in HBO's film Confirmation. Don't miss a News One Now primetime special, Kerry Washington Revealed, Sunday night at 10 on TV One.
Folks, on Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on TV One, we have a News One primetime special, Kerry Washington Reveal. She's the star of Scandal. She also is going to play Anita Hill in HBO's movie Confirmation, which airs on Saturday. Here's a sneak peek.
I was 14 when it happened, so a lot of my memories about it were actually through the perspective of my parents. Mm-hmm. And in my house, you know, we talked a lot about issues, social issues at the dinner table, but whether it was about education or women's right to choose, affirmative action, housing, we were all generally on the same page. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the first moments, and my dad doesn't love when I talk about this, because, you know, he may not love to admit it now, but he and my mom were at odds because he really felt pulled toward this black man who was watching his career and his reputation be stripped from him on the national stage by a panel of white men, being embarrassed publicly, being demeaned. He felt very upset about that. And my mother was very pulled toward Anita Hill. And so as somebody who was very close to both parents, I felt pulled in both directions.
Like a tennis match, you're like.
A little bit, yeah. And I think it was the first time that I was aware of that idea of intersectionality. You know, this idea that I will feel a certain way as a woman, right, as a feminist. Sometimes I will feel a certain way as a person of color. And there may be times where those are at odds with each other. You know, it's Sojourner Truth, ain't I a woman? You know, it's like, where do I fit in to this conversation as a woman of color when both of these ideologies are resonating for me, both the racism part and the sexism part?
Folks, set your DVR. You do not want to miss this conversation. A News One Now primetime special, Kerry Washington Revealed, Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on TV One. We talk about more about Confirmation. We talk about Scandal. We talk about her political activism. Also, why she is all about privacy in when it comes to her marriage, when it comes to her child. And so, folks, you don't want to miss that. Again, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on TV One. Set your DVR, tell your friend. You don't want to miss it. It's a great conversation with Kerry Washington. Folks, you have a great weekend. Holla!
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.